What's the difference between like the average marketer?
There needs to be some substance behind your profession.
How did you move from corporate world to being an entrepreneur?
Best way to say it metaphorically is I had the Ferrari engine already ready, but I had to build the Ferrari around it.
Tell me more about your journey finding a vendor here in Ukraine. And probably the first question will be, why Ukraine?
I think that it's a very smart time to invest in Ukraine.
Hello and welcome to XQL podcast about B2B marketing and biz dev. Today I have Emin Can Turan, founder of Pebbles AI and Canon Co. company. Welcome, Can.
Thank you. Bit of a tough ride from Warsaw to Lviv, but safe and sound here.
Yeah. Tell me please more about your story and to our viewers. How did you end up here and in your position, and what was your journey? So your career?
I can't tell much about how and why. When I came, I fell in love, so much so that I refused to go to Kyiv. I just want to stay here. I fell in love with the architecture, the incredible food. I mean, I probably gained a good 5-6 kilograms in a couple of weeks. I kept eating vereniki and I could not stop eating borscht. I mean, I loved it. It was it reminded me of Oxford. In terms of my my career, yeah, well, I'm not that old, but I did. So I studied strategic marketing at Cranfield School of Management, and then I did a postgraduate degree at Oxford University in deep technology strategy, essentially learning how to take technologies to market. And I started off my career working at the big tech. So I first worked at Google in product marketing. Then I went on to work at Cisco in performance analytics, and thereafter in Walmart in basically B2B pricing strategies. I don't know why, but I was very fortunate and also unfortunate to be in, like, you know, most of the time in the leadership departments, where I was the youngest person by like 20 years. It was quite lonely, but it was very educational. I got a lot of exposure to the top CEOs and, or at least the C-suite of these companies. You know, at Google, I even met Larry Page and Sergey Brin in our trip to Las Vegas. And Cisco, my reports would go all the way up to Karen Walker, who was, I believe, the CMO of Cisco. And at Walmart, my reports would usually go up to Doug McMillon, who is the CEO of. I learned a lot. It wasn't easy. We always made jokes. I won't say the company, but we usually made jokes is that, you know, you're not a professional until you at least cry 3 times in the bathroom. It was very pressurizing, you know, coming out of university, working in these companies. It's very different. And nothing that you learn in university, regardless how good this university is, will prepare you for what is to come. You're competing with, you know, the best of the best of the world. Everyone, you know, comes from the best universities. Everyone is hyper ambitious and very smart. So, for example, the cohort I started with, which we funnily coined as the Googlers at Google. Everyone 10 years later down the line has become an entrepreneur and quite a successful one, I might add. And everyone was very, very ambitious and intelligent, and it was quite scary. But I learned a lot. I would say probably the most critical areas of marketing, from marketing strategy to understanding how marketing sales funnels works. At a certain point at Cisco, I was doing all the calculations across the marketing sales funnel from, you know, from a channel point of view, but also from an operational point of view, seeing what channels worked with which countries in MER, but also, you know, which departments would perform the best and why, if they didn't perform, why that was. And I would come with that data. So I had Excel models that were like 120 megabytes big to kind of basically, I was basically extracting data from different tools and putting this into a very coherent overview of what was really going on. So I learned a lot, and seeing I was also very ambitious. I've really developed a passion for startups. When I was a child, I was always, well, I was very difficult. Like, I was constantly curious. Every technology I saw, I had to rip it apart and see what was in. And obviously my dad was very upset because he buys a new computer and a couple of weeks later, it's in 15 pieces. So I always had a bit of a passion for technology. Funny enough, I actually knew how to code a bit when I was young. I kind of forgot that now. My dad studied physics and my mother studied literature. So I always say that my brain, you know, my systematic brain probably comes from my dad and my ability to find creative solutions to complex problems probably comes from my mother. I was working at these big tech companies. I pursued my passion in emerging myself into the startup and scale-up world. So I used to mentor I still do in some cases at Google for Startups, Virgin Startup, Founder Institute, PwC Scale. And I would sit there either as a masterclass instructor or a business mentor. And, you know, all of this work, I this was my way of giving back to society. There was no compensation whatsoever. I just liked helping founders. The joy and the dopamine effect I would get did come from helping and seeing founders excel. But over time, I also saw the frustration. I understood that a lot of founders, especially in the first 7 years when they're running their company, they get really screwed over often by people that just manipulate themselves inside of their inner circle and claim that they know how to take them to market and make them successful. So it wasn't a big surprise where I learned that, you know, we all know that 9 out of 10 companies fail. I mean, that's a generous overall good statistic in most countries. But what people often don't see is that 85% of those 9 are often related to go-to-market reasons, whether it's the pricing strategy that is incorrect, or they are spending the money on the wrong funnel in the wrong segment with the wrong messaging. Only 15% is like related to, you know, problems between the founders or other reasons. And that made me very frustrated. I got very angry. You know, I would see founders that would get advice from external consultants or internal advisors that are 150 years old and have completely lost touch with reality in terms of how marketing technology works, giving them advice which just leads them to deplete their budgets. And I've seen brand and marketing agencies with very little to no experience in taking companies to market, telling companies how they should do it.
And how should they do it?
Well, not this way. So I always say is that I'm not saying all, but most marketing brand agencies are creative led. Mm-hmm. There's no science based systematic manner of going to market. This is why, for example, the big strategy consultancies like McKinsey, Bain, and BCG, you know, they really dominate in terms of going to market and providing strategies. You know, they have their own proprietary strategy models, and they have the most talented, most intelligent, ruthless people to go and execute on them. But, you know, founders can't afford that. It's like, you know, an average ticket size for a strategy is anywhere between 300 and 600,000 pounds. So there's this huge gap in the market. And what should a founder do? Like, should I hire an internal head of marketing, which is around 100 to 150K? You're taking the chance whether or not this person has the strategic capabilities as well as the hands-on mentality to execute. Should they take a chance on a marketing or brand agency that essentially takes a creative approach going to market, where what they're essentially doing is using bog standard strategy models like a SWOT analysis and some other principles. And then they execute by basically you running Google Ads and other channels they think would work, and basically capitalizing on 70% margin. So you would give 10K, they would put 70% in their pocket, 30% would go to Google Ads. So on the one hand, so you got the head of marketing that you can hire, but you have to hire correctly. On the other hand, you can work with marketing brand agencies who do not have a scientific approach, nor their own strategy models. So before I started Canon Co, which I kind of coined as the McKinsey for small, medium-sized enterprises, I knew from my own experience working in big tech, mid-tech, so scale-ups as well as startups, that there is a huge gap in the market. And during COVID time, I actually, with a good friend of mine who is now our head of market intelligence, we essentially went to 120 brand and marketing agencies and asked them a bunch of very critical questions like, what are your strategy models? Do you have any kind of unique approach? Who is sitting in your leadership team and who sits in your execution team? And what are your pricing? And what we saw was literally a validation of what I already knew, which is, it's a very corrupt industry, the growth industry. It's very based on selling. You know, they come to your office, that they do a great sales pitch, but the execution lacks. So often what I see is that, you know, small, medium-sized enterprises, they work with these companies and then 6 months down the line, they realize, you know, we're not getting our return on investment, and it's really difficult to work with them. And what we found out from my primary research is that almost none of them have their own strategy models. We found one of 120. So we approached marketing and brand agencies in New York, in London, and in Amsterdam. There was one that had their own proprietary strategy models, and most prices are ridiculously high. And they're not set for, you know, the whole approach is not set for a win-win relationship where the company grows and therefore we grow. And then we even went and did the extra work and we looked at each of those companies. We went on LinkedIn, we looked at their leadership teams, we looked at their execution teams. And I mean, to say this very diplomatically, it wasn't really like that. They studied at the top tier universities, and I don't want to come across like an elitist or a snob, because I mean, I had to work myself up here myself. But I do want to say that if you never studied marketing or strategy or anything related field in one of the top tier places, and you've never really worked a day of your life in corporate and had really a passion in helping founders. I'm not talking about growing startups, helping founders realize their, you know, their dreams and getting their innovation to market. In my mind, you know, you don't have any authority in telling, you know, founders how to run or grow their company.
What's the difference between like the average marketer and your marketing perspective? Is it like data, deep market research? What are the parts of like, what's the difference between the approach, creative and et cetera? Would you say it's not effective? and your approach, which is more effective because you have all this experience. And yeah, from founder's perspective, like how should he know what to look at and how to choose an agency or a specialist?
That's a good question. I think macro level, you need to look at a company, an agency that has a scientific approach. That's the first thing I would do. Personally, this is how I would do it. I would look at, right, who's at the top? Who's leading? Who started this agency? Is that if that's a person that has, used to work at Meta or X or Google or whatever. Because these are the companies combined with the strategy consultancies like McKinsey. These are the guys that they almost define going to market. It's not just marketing. It's the process of going to market. And marketing is only a part of it. So I would look at, do they have the relevant experience? Have they started this company because they have a really unique set of skills and knowledge and they want to share that with the world? Or did they start this company because they didn't really have another choice? And this is what they just chose to do. So I would look at the leadership team who started this company, and I would then look at the execution team because, yes, great, the leadership team has developed a very cool approach, and they might even have their own strategy models and their own execution techniques, but who is the person actually executing on those on a day-to-day basis on our behalf? If that's some intern, respectfully, I mean, this is a very complex endeavor. Going to market is a multifaceted, multidisciplinary, scientific approach. So the execution team needs to be as strong as the leadership team of this agency. Otherwise, it's just better to just hire internally or do it yourself. I mean, work over the weekend. I mean, your spouse will probably be, or your girlfriend or boyfriend will probably be very angry with you, but it's probably better. So I think a science-led approach with a strong leadership team and a strong execution team will yield you much more and higher results. That's what I would look at. In fact, with every vendor that we work with, we do this. We look at them. So for a marketing and brand agency, for example, we look at, the experience of the leadership team in terms of, their academic and corporate experience, and also their altruism. So meaning, have they volunteered in helping startups? Do they really have a passion? Because everything goes wrong always with going to market. You have a strategy, which is good. You need to have a goal, but you go like this eventually. So if they have a passion for helping, then they will go the extra mile to help you. They will never ask you for extra money for the additional couple of hours they worked. They will do that because that's their passion.
So currently you're a founder of Ken&Co, which is a marketing consulting agency. How did you move from corporate world to being an entrepreneur?
Well, first of all, it was very scary. Like it's, the Dutch mentality is very much, study at good universities and, find yourself a, good, corporate work and then excel there. The Dutch are great with a lot of things like innovation. But we're not necessarily the entrepreneurial capital of Europe. So it was very scary. I chose London, because London was the only city in Europe that could kind of meet my ambitions. And it was during COVID where I realized, I'm making more money helping more companies and being much more happier in deploying my own proprietary strategy models. So I quit. I took the plunge, as they say, and it was very scary. So after this primary research that I just told you, I realized, okay, this is not just in my head. There is a gap in the market. There should be a science-based approach of going to market. I have developed my own strategy models over the past 10 years, validated them in the market with some of the coolest, you know, scale ups, and tweaked them accordingly. So, you know, the best way to say it metaphorically is I had the Ferrari engine already ready, but I had to build the Ferrari around it. And that's what I did during COVID. And the first 2 years were amazing. COVID brought a lot of hardship for many people. In my case, it kind of reset my mindset. And I built a company around it, grew it, built my team when we helped many companies. And it was great. It is still great. Helping founders. So when we deployed a strategy model, so we developed their, say, the enterprise-grade strategy models, and we see them execute on them, we see this huge growth in their top to middle funnel. And if their salespeople are good as well, their entire marketing sales funnel. And that's really fun to look at. And it makes me happy. It makes me happy to be able to support people with big dreams that overall make the world a better place. Like, I'll never work with a casino, for example. But most of the time, they're, you know, people with a technology background.
Yeah, so with all this knowledge, I still have a question about how marketers should develop and what skills they should develop, or founders should develop. What skills founders should develop in their marketing teams in terms of to be able to successfully execute go-to-market strategies?
I mean, let me start macro level again. Like, marketing, like when you're a lawyer, you studied law, and you know, you got a law degree and you have to pass the bar. And if you want to become a doctor, you have to study medicine, and then you have to pass your medical exam. We don't have this in marketing. So any Tom, Dick, and Harry can be a marketing specialist or a CMO. A bit of waffle and a good sales pitch, and everyone is a marketing or sales expert. And that makes everyone that genuinely puts a lot of effort in their knowledge building of marketing, it puts them in a bad position. So marketing and also salespeople really have to put double effort in expanding their knowledge on the subject. Now, for example, lawyers, their profession is law, and it could be anything from corporate law to criminal law. I think with marketing, you have to really dig down into psychology, neuromarketing, marketing technology. You need to find a specialism. Either you become the expert in channels, so you are specialized in knowing every or most important marketing technologies to take the messaging to market, and know the sequences, the protocols, the logic, so that the delivery is excellent. Or you, for example, have to be a specialist in the message of the company, their value proposition, their USP, in the right way to the right people to market. And for this, you really have to know. You need knowledge. And everything is out there now. There is no excuse, but you have to choose a field. My field is really strategy. So I come really with, you know, take the strategy, I deploy it with you, follow it, and you'll be successful. And there are people that are specialists and really specialists in SEO, and some people are really specialists. That's one channel, by the way, and in content. But then for any, and most technologies are very smart people and they're very systematic thinkers. They will be, okay, fine, you are a content expert. What makes you so unique? Why should I hire you? Or, you know, why should we work with you? And then you should have a darn good reasons why it should be you. It could be, well, I do a lot of primary research on the personas that we are targeting, and I translate that back into, you know, bite-sized kind of content that really resonates with the target audience. I am really knowledgeable on neuromarketing or persuasion techniques, or I'm a specialist in the ethos, pathos, logos principles. There needs to be some substance behind your profession, and there is no easy way to do it. It's knowledge. Knowledge is power, especially in marketing and sales. You're dealing in the worlds of influence. You're trying to influence a person to do something. For this, you need to go to the right person. So that's segment and persona or exactly. You will need to find the right channel to deliver that message to. The message itself needs to be correct. Lexical semantics and semiotics, the sciences of the two most important things in communication.
I think the problem is in founders too, because usually when a marketer comes to the company, especially if it's a startup or just a small, medium company, founders want to execute right away. And they also think in terms of the channels. And the success of successful go-to-market strategy is in preparation and research and taking time to do customer research, to do the messaging, to do the strategy. And usually it can take even months, and the founders don't want to waste this time, and they want to do SEO, paid channels, etc. What are your thoughts on this? And like, maybe we should emphasize the importance of preparation and strategy before you are going to channels and everything.
You're 100% right. Like everything you said, yeah, founders are very impatient. They want everything done yesterday as fast as possible. I mean, they have their own internal urges. They have VCs, you know, breathing down their neck. They need to grow the company so that they can afford, you know, their employee salaries. You know, I completely understand, but you're right. I mean, you need a strategy. A strategy is as important as execution. It's like a two-piece puzzle. You need both. And I think it is the job of a marketing specialist to set expectations. Mm-hmm. This stuff will not work unless we have an evidence-based approach of going to market. Otherwise, we're just shooting in the dark without any idea. The bullets can be perfect, but if you're targeting the wrong people, I mean, it doesn't really matter, does it?
The marketing comes in.
Exactly. And then it's the fault of the marketing person or the salesperson in for that matter. I was terrible. I'll be honest. I was pretty terrible. Like I have a lot of patience in explaining founders and startups, but when I was working in, you know, corporate and I had to explain certain things, I never had the patience. I'm like, okay, you should know this. You are a leadership team. You should know this. You should know how important this is. I should not be explaining this to you. But if you are working with small, medium-sized enterprises, half your job is educating the team, the company. Yes. Well, no one's going to listen to you if you don't have your specialist. It goes back to, okay, great, you are a marketing strategist or your content manager or anything, but if you don't have substance behind your title, no one is going to listen to you. And that's the big stigma we have as well for marketing salespeople. Oh, it's just a marketing person. Oh, it's just a salespeople. These guys are the reason why the company will continue to exist, because they will drive revenue. I mean, they are super important. So unfortunately, we have that stigma. But I think if more and more professionals really fill their knowledge on a specific area or multiple areas of their their profession and get specialized, then they will have more political power inside of the organization to educate people and to convince them, no, we should not immediately execute. We should first do a market research, gather some data, primary or secondary, preferably both, then turn that data in and push it into smart strategy models, and then that we should follow the outcome. And not just immediately quit 3 months later if, you know, if it doesn't work, because it takes a while.
Yeah.
It takes a while. Mm-hmm. Rarely we see, you know, product-led marketing with like immediate network effect, like for example, OpenAI, ChatGPT, mm-hmm. Rarely. So you have to be patient. You have to trust the method. You have to trust the methodology. I always call it like a relay race. So you got strategy running, giving the baton to the marketing person, running the baton then goes to the salesperson, you know, the massage, the SDR, then that person runs and gives the final lead to essentially to the founder who has to close it. And often founders also forget first 5 years or so, you are the person that needs to close the deals. The funnel needs to end with you.
Cool. I totally agree with this. Now, AI changing the world. You mentioned OpenAI. How do you use AI in your work? And how do you think it's changing sales and marketing today?
AI will have positive and negative effects. I'll start with the negative. It's because, you know, you already see it. Like you get spam left, right, and center now by emails and by LinkedIn messages and other channels. Because again, now every Tom, Dick, and Harry that has zero interest in marketing and hasn't done any degree or specialism is now doing marketing. And the mails and the messages that are coming in are really crowding up the inboxes of technology leaders or any other B2B company. So it's harder for genuine professionals to stick out through the crowd. It's very difficult now. Direct marketing has become very difficult, like very difficult. We see this across the regions for all different types of products. I mean, you can have the new green fossil fuel of the world, but if no one sees it because of this, you know, bombardment of it's almost like spam, then it won't see the light of day. It will not change the world. And that's really unfortunate. And that's one of the negative aspects. I think another negative aspect will be is that we will be too reliant on AI capabilities. And again, it goes back to your own knowledge, is that you will forget how to write, like we've forgotten how to write with our hand. We will not be interested in what the reasoning behind what the AI is doing or the outputs it's giving. So you're not interested in the knowledge, how it came to this, you know, answer, and you just care about the answer, which is bad. Because, for example, when you provide an output from the AI and you give it to your manager or your CEO, the next question will be, why this? Why this content? But if you are really passionate about marketing and sales, and if you are really passionate in going to market, this gives you superpowers. You need to know how to use it, though. And I have seen many, many examples in practice where even the best of marketing and salespeople don't really know how to utilize it yet. It's like when Google came out, we were just experimenting with it. We're there now. So those are the two things I would say.
In terms of AI, you founded a new company.
Correct. Pebbles AI.
Pebbles AI. Yeah. You are building a product. Tell me more about how does this work.
Sure. Personally, the idea came to be before OpenAI actually became public news. I knew it was coming, and I understood that Canonco, however you know, incredible in our performance and our proprietary strategy models that in 5 years' time we might be obsolete. And I believe that McKinsey and BCG and Bain are really in trouble as well. Mm-hmm. It's really a massive disruption of technology. So it was either I become an employee of AI or I become an employer of AI, and I would want to lead this. And now I also at the time, we were living in Lviv just before the war, and my wife and I, we had to leave Lviv and go back to London because I was getting information that a war was impending, and I had 3 days. So we went back to London, and my wife had to get used to the London mindset, which is, you know, people in Lviv are beautiful and they're super smart and very ambitious. But London is like a coliseum with gladiators. It's really, it's a different mindset. And we had to really support each other. And I really had to get her into the mindset of you know, of these gladiators. So I distilled whatever knowledge I had into her, explained all the methodologies and the logic and whatever I could, because she's also a senior marketing manager, and I understood this could be easier. It's very hard sometimes to you know, train your spouse. It's, you know, as probably most people would know. But it was successful. I mean, a year later, despite the war and all the tragedies, she's excelling. Like, she's incredible. She flew to the moon. She's still flying. It's only a small portion. It's me, obviously. It's mostly her intellect and her thrive. But I understood, you know, how can I get my go-to-market knowledge from working in the big tech, mid-tech, and startups, from studying at some of the leading institutions, as well as working on the, you know, the best incubators and accelerators in Europe? How can I get that knowledge and my strategy models and my science-based go-to-market technique into a system where every marketing and salesperson and a founder or C-suite can have access to this? How can I democratize this? Because currently, this knowledge sits in only the big tech and the leading strategy consultancies of the world. They lead it. They literally paved the way for the future of mark tech. And then I understood, okay, AI is part of this, but the core of it is the infrastructure. So I stopped serving clients, and I lived off my savings during the war, and tried to find an infrastructural solution, how I can upload that knowledge. And I found a solution, and I built an incredible team around me. And now we are, to my knowledge, the only European go-to-market specific AI marketing tool in Europe. There's one competition in the US. I won't name them, but we are. And what we see is that, you know, whether it's ChatGPT or other companies that are, most of them just basic wrappers around OpenAI, it's innovation driven, which is, okay, this is what the technology can do, and this is what we would serve to the clients or consumers or customers. With us, it's like, this is the existing problems in the marketing sales workflow and all the problems that I just mentioned. How can we improve that? And we saw that with our technology and with our knowledge, we can automate 76% of the entire marketing sales or go-to-market workflow, essentially. Strategy, marketing, and sales. And it's very exciting. It's very cool.
Do you have your own models or you run on some APIs?
We run our own models. I won't go too deep into it, but it's a multi-tiered LLM model and it's a AI native architecture. It took a long time for us to build this because I wanted the core to really be able to sustain the knowledge where we're uploading. So it's not, you know, it's the infrastructure, but it's also at the same time your AI that has to optimize itself. It's two things actually. And then we had to find a very smart way to get all of this very complicated knowledge. So we're talking about 85 types of user parameters. We're talking about 35 applied sciences in going to market. We're talking about 15 strategy models. We're talking about 2 gigabytes worth of completely curated go-to-market knowledge. I mean, the permutations that brings, it's insane. And so we had to, by case study in the product, you know, whether it's an upsell or a cross-sell, you will be able, the AI will tell you exactly what you need for this. And it will also, the product will explain to you why. So it's not just an execution tool. It's also a tool to make marketing and sales and or leadership more smarter about going to market. Because our goal is to make them survive. That's our goal. There's a lot of incredible people out there and technologies out there that deserve to see the market and deserve to make our world a better place. And if you look at history, technology has been one of the primary drivers of society.
Now, some content for our Ukrainian audience, which is my primary audience, is auto development companies. Tell me more about your journey finding a vendor here in Ukraine. And probably the first question will be, why Ukraine? Of course, you love Lviv people here. but maybe there are different aspects. Why did you choose Ukraine and what was your journey finding a vendor?
Sure. Why Ukraine? It's very simple. I believe that the best developers in the world are Ukrainian, by far. They have the mindset, they're logical, they're passionate, they work hard, they work really hard. And I really respect that. The second thing is what people don't realize is actually Ukraine is also really good and very creative in marketing and UX and UI. Like I see it on every day when I, you know, go outside. I don't read Ukrainian, but I have Google Translate it's very impressive. I think with quality, they're not that cheaper than, for example, if you compare it to other countries like India, for example, Pakistan. But in terms of, and we did a geo-global kind of comparison, benchmarking, in terms of quality and reliability and cost, Ukraine is at the top by far. And this is why we chose to work with vendors in Ukraine. And since I also live in Lviv, one third of the year. Of course, I would like it to be in Lviv.
Mm-hmm. And what was your approach to choosing the vendor?
Oh, we had with everything what we do, right? We take a very science-based approach. So we created a benchmarking framework with weighted averages. Where we had a couple of criteria. So we looked at, for example, how big is their team? Of that team, how much percent is an engineer and how much percent is a marketing or in sales? So if it's a lot of marketing and sales, I know it's very commercial driven and they might not have the engineering specialist in house. If it's very engineer driven, I know that, you know, our product is in good hands. We looked at the leadership team, Do they have a proper background in engineering? Because, you know, leadership, you know, the culture comes from the top. We looked at the execution team as well, like who are the people that they have hired? Are they? And one of the fewest things that we looked at is, for example, cost. Mm-hmm. We really focused on quality and these things. And eventually we found several vendors that were amazing and we built products with them. And my clients at Canon Co. also built products with them as well. Because I referred them, and everyone was happy. I mean, during war, especially in the first months, our vendor teams would deliver on time, at full, at quality, never miss a meeting, regardless of blackouts, they were always there. I mean, I really admire the Ukrainian people, but I particularly admire the tenacity of Ukrainian entrepreneurs. And boy, are they strong.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of your bio journey, where you, like, did you visit Clutch or some listings with companies? Did you Google it? Or you turned to your, like, acquaintances to ask for referrals, because I know you reached out to me to ask, did I know some companies from Lviv who do software development? What was your buying journey?
Multiple channels, all of the lists you just say, from Clutch to friends to just online research. So we made a list around 100. No, actually, we made around 300 companies in Lviv, Kyiv, and Kharkiv. Then we got that 300, we did the benchmarking. We looked at a lot, we looked at their case studies as well and on their website and other things. And then we went down to, I believe, 30 or so companies, and we emailed them all with, this is our project, this is our scope, what is the timeline on this? And what is the duration? What is the cost? And then eventually we had three companies left and we chose the one that had the worst website, honestly. But they were, I mean, the CEOs, for example, studied at, did his master's at UKU. For your listeners, that's like the Harvard of Ukraine, has many years of worked at SoftServe and other big American companies. And then eventually transition to becoming an entrepreneur. Those are the kind of people I trust, because they had a choice. They had a choice to make, you know, have a stable job with a high salary, but they chose to, you know, choose the entrepreneur route. And that's a scary route to take. And we chose them and they were great. And we still work with them. It's funny, like, so we had some insights as well, which is, you know, for example, if a vendor would have very cool names like Grammarly or other big names like that on their website, the price would go up by like 3x. It's so funny because the standard deviation was really on the right hand side. It was the average cost of the project was like around $150,000, but we would find vendors that would quote the same scope for $450, $500. So you have to do your research, and it has to be without opinion. You know, there should be an objective benchmarking.
You went through a lot of sales calls. What are some tips you can give to Ukrainian founders selling to the customers in UK and in US?
Yeah, so I will be honest, so full disclaimer, the Dutch are very direct, we're raw. There's positive, negative. Positive is you see what you get. We don't manipulate or lie so much. We're very, very direct and transparent. A negative is we can come across a bit rude. That said, I will tell you my raw takeaways by working with many business leaders here in Ukraine. In the West, we're very relationship driven. So a good metaphor is we give with two hands, we take with one. I have spent 10 years of my life working for free hours, providing my wisdom, my experience, and hard work for free, sometimes for equity, but rarely for a consulting fee until I finally started my consulting firm. And still I do pro bono work as well to help founders. And this is important, not just because, I mean, it should be something that every person should do, you know, help your fellow human or fellow entrepreneur. But it's also good for you because people trust you more. And I feel in Ukraine, it's very, what you just mentioned, it's very short-term thinking. It's like, how can I capitalize on this now? It's not very relationship driven. I'll take the vendor, our vendor, for example. I went to their office, I pitched our company, and they were the only one that really understood, like, wow, this could be amazing. You could be our, you know, next Grammarly, for example, one of the big productivity tools in the world. And we really felt like, oh, they get it. They, you know, and they were nice to us in our in terms of cost and delivery in the beginning, allowing us to stand on our own feet. And yeah, I feel I'm starting, by the way, with this, but there's a lot of positive things as well. But let me start with the things they can improve on is, why don't you go and, you know, some practical tips. Why don't you sit on some online, as a founder of big companies, be a thought leader, be the champion of young technology companies. People will see what you're doing. Now, I understand with a certain success comes with a certain comfort. But, you know, take Elon Musk for an example. You know, he used to lie on the factory floor, giving the example to his personnel and his stakeholders. You know, stay hungry and help people. And by helping people, you show people that it's not just about the money, it's about the passion, it's about solving problems. And by going to, you know, a lot of startup events, scale-up events, technology conferences, sharing or organizing workshops. These are things that really help getting big audiences, and they're great lead funnels as well. They're really good. Because again, you give with two hands, you take with one. Now, don't get me wrong. I really understand why this transactional mindset is here. I get it. But I also get that Ukraine will be one day part of Europe. Mm-hmm. And this is, I think we need both. We need to be transactional. I mean, we're, you know, still capitalism. We still need to make money. But I think we can make money by helping as well at the same time. That's possible. You can, if you're smart enough, and if you take a moment, you can find a win-win solutions. I often see, for example, where founders are just saying no or yes, like a switch. You know, if you have longer conversations, and yes, I understand sometimes it can be painful, these conversations, and long and tedious and sometimes annoying and frustrating, but you can in the end come to a win-win situation where you still have a client that refers other bigger clients to you. It's possible. You're going for the network effect. That's the whole point. You're going for adoption, then revenue, then profit.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. You talked about Ukraine. What is your perspective on the future of Ukraine and in probably a few years?
Well, okay. Here I'm just going to be very direct because I don't care. I think Ukraine will be the next Germany of Europe within 10 years. From its people, its mindset, to the resources, to the leadership, I think it will be the next Germany. I think Europe is very lucky to have Ukraine. And even thinking about it makes me a bit emotional. I get excited and angry at the same time. And I think that Ukraine has a lot to offer to the world, and particularly Europe. And I believe that us in the West have lost our ways in terms of hard work and discipline. And I think Ukraine could remind us of that, especially now that we're competing with the likes of, for example, China. We need a bit of a kick up our arse in order to get ourselves back on track. And I think Ukraine is the perfect country to do so. You know, it really belongs in Europe. It should have belonged in Europe a long time ago. And I think that it's a very smart time to invest in Ukraine right now, both in business, if you want to buy a house, get involved. It's a great country. It has amazing food. They're nice people. I mean, I can easily communicate with the, you know, with my grocery shop owner around the corner easily. You know, she doesn't speak a word of English, but I say chut-chut and you know, voda. And, you know, we get along. And people are sweet and nice, and they're hungry to learn more, and they want great experiences. I think this should, I mean, we need a bit of humility in the West, and I think Ukraine will show that to us.
Wow, thanks. Thanks a lot. I think on this positive note, we can finish.
Thank you for having me.